Washington football. Woo! And welcome to the Burgundy Zone. I am your host, Kyle, and I'm joined by my fellow co-host, Michael Hall. But we're also joined by a very special guest, Julie Donaldson, the Senior VP of Media Content for the Washington Football Team. Julie, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, right now, it is the hot time to be talking about Washington football, right? I mean, come on. This team's feeling pretty good right about now, and I have a feeling more wins are going to be coming, so I'm all in.
Absolutely. They've won four in a row, three on the road straight with a 23-15 win over the San Francisco 49ers. So, Julie, let's hop right into it. What was the biggest takeaway from you after that game?
Chase Young. Okay. I mean, it's, you know, Mike Tomlin, I think, said it pretty well after the Steelers game. It's like, man, I don't want a dude like you because I have to lose 13, 14 games to get it. But he is that guy. He easily, and I hear analysts say this left and right, different players that I interview over multiple generations say at any one of their drafts, then or now, he could easily be that number one guy. The reason he wasn't the number one guy is because Cincinnati happened to need a quarterback and they got Joe Burrow. Otherwise, he'd have been gone. He wouldn't have been sitting there at number two. It's nice to see the impact he's having on the team, how he's elevating the play of other guys around him, how wherever he's at, he's making a play, he's making a move. And to do it all in one game was pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, and speaking of impressive, in the era of a passing offense league where all the rules just seem to be geared towards offense, this football team was able to win the game yesterday defensively without much of an input from the offense. How much of a surprise and how much does that really say about this defense?
Well, somebody had to put up points, right? If the offense isn't going to do it, it's nice to know that the defense can. Look, getting two defensive touchdowns in one game hasn't been done since like 1997, and Darryl Green was one of those. So it's just not something that you expect or see in a game. But and everybody says that, you know, basically one defensive touchdown is not just, you know, the 6 points. Basically, it's considered two. So we really were further ahead than we really thought. Yes, we want the offense to be able to contribute more. We need more. We have to have more. There's no way you can continue on if the offense isn't putting up numbers. But this team was built on defense. That's what we considered coming into the season was going to be the strength. At times, we even had to be patient watching them come together, though. But now you're really seeing how they're locked in, locked down, and they're excited for that. You know, I don't think that, you know, you have to be worried about necessarily a letdown. This team is starting to taste what it's like to get like those big plays. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also where Chase is contributing. He's not happy with just what he did in that one game. He wants to be able to do that exact performance every single game.
Yeah, in the past 2 weeks, they've been wearing the white-on-white uniforms, Julie. The fan base absolutely loves it. The players love playing in it. Ron Rivera said that, you know, he picked these white uniforms for big games. How was it calling games and seeing them in those white-on-white uniforms for you?
It looks clean, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
You know, I like that Coach Rivera was saying he heard how much the players love it. And when I talked to a lot of the guys that got to wear those, they were their favorite unis, hands down. The white-on-white, you know, it's sharp, it's crisp, and they like looking like that. So it's nice that he waited for a big game. In all honesty, I was a little surprised that he brought it right back out two games in a row. How often are we going to, you know, go with this now? The players love it. It's working. So we'll see if we get to see it again.
Right. And throughout these 13 weeks so far, there's been a lot of players that have stepped up, a lot of unsung heroes. Who's someone that you've been most impressed with offensive or defensive wise?
You know who? All right. So a couple of my guys are coming off of defense right now. And that would be, I love Cam Curl. I love the challenge that he was tasked with. And it just seems kind of like easy peasy breezy to him. Mm-hmm. You know, like, okay, here you're drafted in the 7th round. Not much is expected of you. We're going to put you in the Buffalo nickel position. We're only going to bring you out certain packages. And a lot of times we don't need you because we want to go with a smaller guy. So you're too big. We're not going to have you on the field. Landon Collins goes down. Like, let's go bring in somebody off the street. Let's go get an Eric Reed. You know, like, no. That didn't work out, and he could have taken it anyways. It's slight. He could have taken it a number of ways, but he's gone out there, and he's just balled out. I think, you know, you've seen him week in and week out lead the team in tackles. be that aggressive mindset, the stage not being too big for him. So I really like his approach as well. I love that of Cole Holcomb. I mean, he brings this certain energy, this downhill mentality that the linebacking core didn't necessarily have. Like they kind of sit back a little bit. He's like, nope, going straight down for it. And, you know, I love the mullet. Somebody was asking all the players about that mullet from him, and they said he is the only guy in this locker room that could rock it, and it fits his personality perfect, which I love. On offense, I really like the growth that we've seen from Logan Thomas. You know, here's a guy that's career was almost over because he wasn't making it at quarterback. And somebody says, hey, let's go to tight end for you. You're athletic. You know the game. You're smart. Let's give it a go. And many people wrote him off as not being able to, you know, be a baller at this level. And he is showing that he can and he can grow with the role, and he's willing to do what it takes at any facet to just contribute. It doesn't have to be the sexy numbers of catching it and getting in the end zone, of which he's one of the best at for the tight end position. Mm-hmm. Some people are talking that he should be in the Pro Bowl for a tight end. And mm-hmm. you didn't have to pay him the $14 million that you went out and you paid the other Austin Hooper that everybody was disappointed of getting. Mm-hmm. And Austin Hooper's not having the year that our Logan Thomas is. So, yep. You know, there are some of the standouts. Cam Sims as well. It's nice to be able to see what he's... That's my contact. We have to wear them around the building to show that we're not too close to anybody. Mind you, I'm in my office alone, but it feeds through the walls. So,
Joey, that was a great moment.
Yeah, there's been a lot of cool standouts, hasn't there?
Yeah, there has.
And now one of the biggest aspects for me, Julie, is that the Washington football team seems to be constantly disrespected by the national media altogether. You know, every time they're picking these games, it's the other team by a long shot. They're saying every single analyst is picking them. Do you? I know that the team and the players obviously kind of like that underdog mentality, but do you think they're kind of gaining that respect nationally with these wins?
Oh, I mean, you watch any of the shows now, and Washington's up every few minutes with another segment, another analyst, somebody talking about it. Our guys getting up there and getting interviewed, which is fantastic. You know, everybody's going to want a little bit of that attention. And I think this team, they deserve it. They're young, they haven't had it. And for those that have been here before, you know, of course it was always in a negative sense. And a lot of those guys like the John Allens, they're not used to that because they come from programs where, you know, this certain expectation and standard of success and winning is just, it's the bare minimum for them. So I like that they're starting to get a little bit more attention. I liked that when I was watching some of the analysts ahead of San Fran, where nobody picked us in front of the Steelers, quite a few actually went more with us ahead of this game. So they are getting that attention now, and the way that they're playing, they deserve it. I just, you know, I don't see it going necessarily to their heads. I hope that that isn't the case. I think this team will stay hungry and they have that mindset to do so. But it's good to see the recognition coming around, you know?
Yeah, it's slowly but surely. Now, Alex Smith had tightness in his calf muscle yesterday, so he didn't play for the second half. Haskins came in for relief. Before we get into Alex and him possibly missing time and what that can mean for the offense, what was your opinion of Haskins' play yesterday? To me, it was reminiscent of when Alex came in relief against the Rams, where, you know, coming off the bench, he just didn't look that crisp. But afterwards, when he had a week of practice, he looked much better the following week. Do you think that's the same with Haskins? What was your impression of his play from yesterday?
Oh, yeah, he definitely looked a little rusty. I mean, he hadn't played since week four, right, and he wasn't even dressing for half of those games until Kyle Allen went down. Right. So, yeah, I think there was going to be some rust. And the way that you're at in this season, there's not time for him to get any reps with the ones. Right. So he's not out there doing that now. He's having to just sit back and mimic whatever, you know, whatever he's Alex Smith doing and going through his progressions, you know, in that facet. That's the only way that he's being able to get that work outside of being with the scout team. So, no, I think the expectations deserve to be measured a little bit on what you're expecting from him. The biggest thing I think you didn't want was for him to lose the game for you. You know, the numbers weren't necessarily sexy for him, but he didn't lose it.
Right.
And I think that that's something that you put some stock into. Can he work more and get sharper with his footwork? Can he get better with his accuracy? You know, he still seems to, you know, be throwing it a little bit high. You know, the ball to Steven Sims Jr. that he didn't catch. Santana Moss was going like, we say, okay, you know, if it touches your hands, you should be able to catch it. But Tam's like, man, that came in hot. Like, you know, he didn't even give him a chance to get it. Like, you know, so there's still things that Dwayne has to learn on the touch he puts on the ball. Because he has that arm, he has that speed, but you don't have to break your receiver's hands every time the ball comes out of your, you know, out of you. You get that release. So there's still a lot that I think he's got to learn. And that's one of what Coach Rivera wanted to do is like, you know, we need to be able to sit back, give him the reps, give him the practice, give him a full off season before we put him back out there again. So look, you hope Alex Smith is good to go because Alex has this offense as a top offense in the NFL when he's out there, the way that he's been running and executing it. So hopefully that soreness and the muscle cramps are just that, and he's good to go against Seattle.
Absolutely. And I'm not going to ask if you think he's possibly going to be available, but my question to you is, if he does miss time, what is your confidence level with this offense, 1 out of 10, without Alex, with Dwayne Haskins as the starter? Do you think that they'll be okay without Alex?
They'll have to be. You know, I think what you just have to do is Scott Turner has to say, okay, what can we do with Dwayne? What are his strengths? Where can we make him comfortable? And not try to ask him to do what you're asking Alex to do. You know, you're probably going to scale a few things back for him. And that's okay, because we've also seen a lot of growth from our receivers at this point. You know, I don't know when Antonio Gibson comes back, but that I believe is a big miss on offense as well, the way that he's really emerged. But this team around the quarterback is very different than when Dwayne played. You know, Dwayne played the first 4 games of the season, and you know the offense is always going to take longer to come together. So they didn't have that preseason to get there. Those first 4 games, you could argue, were a bit like that. That's how they, you know, thought that he was still playing a little bit. So the pieces around the quarterback are better and sharper. So hopefully when he does, should he get back in there, things flow much better than they were and be able to keep this team going. But, you know, look, you got to go with what you have. Dwayne's a capable quarterback. He definitely, I think, needs, just needs those reps and needs that time.
Right. Now, sticking on the offensive side of the ball, you mentioned Gibson being out, and we don't know when he's going to be back. And him and Terry McLaurin have kind of been labeled those big play kind of special guys on the offense that the defense needs to prepare for. Do you think that the offense can kind of withstand what they're going through right now without getting contributions from Terry McLaurin going forward? Sorry about that.
I think Terry will have his games again. He'll have his shots again. I mean, he's too darn good. I mean, defenses, though, they're afraid of him now. You know, I mean, he's getting doubled every team. You know, like they have like a safety shadowing him everywhere he goes as well, and, you know, drawing the best corners. So he's got a challenge, but he is a player and a playmaker. And the way that they use him, lining him up all over, he's on pace to have, you know, 100 targets and receptions, which means he just eclipsed 1,000 yards. I mean, this kid's going to keep on going, this young man, I should say. I mean, he is so mature beyond his years as well. Right. I'm excited for the future of Terry. I love his work ethic. I love him as a man, what he contributes on that field. You know, I always ask the players, like, give me, you know, a favorite player you love to watch, offense or defense, and they all go to Terry. Mm-hmm. It's almost like he's just somebody that electrifying. And has that ability. Like even when he went in that, was it the Cowboys game? He went and saved the touchdown on that pick, mm-hmm. the pick 6. Mm-hmm. Like that effort is contagious to the other guys in the locker room. So I like what Terry can do and will do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to ask you, because Julie, last time that we had you on, it was before the season had started, and Dwayne actually wasn't even the captain yet. So my question to you is, what is the biggest difference, if you could kind of pinpoint it for us, what is the biggest difference from then until now with this football team?
They've got time together. Mm. You know, they've learned each other. They've grown together. They know, you know, more about each other's tendencies, where they line up and what they want and how to communicate. Again, that was time that they didn't have during the preseason.
Yeah.
You know, that's time that they didn't have during the off season and underneath this new coaching regime of what's going to be expected and how they want them to go. You know, I was talking with John Allen and we're a couple of weeks ago now, and he was like, look, we're still learning how to play with each other in this technique, in this system. So you have to be a little bit patient, but now here we are weeks beyond that, and you're starting to see them be kind of like pick that up. And once they get it, then it starts settling in and they can say, okay, that's was the reasoning behind it. And they're having fun doing it. Because they're seeing that work and things that they didn't understand before, or things they got frustrated before, and learning the new techniques or wherever, you know, they were paying off. And, you know, even Coach Rivera today was saying, like, it's an off day. 37 guys were in there working out. Over 20 guys were getting, you know, worked on their bodies. And there's not that many injured, but they want to make sure that they're ready to go and they're anxious to go. The parking lot was full. And I kept thinking, like, I thought they weren't here, allowed to be here. They wanted to be. And awesome. I think that's the big difference, is they're coming together as a team. We're finding the character. We're finding their identity at this point.
Yeah, and look, everyone's going to point to the obvious with Cam Curl and Chase Young being the players of the game. Is there an underrated hero of the game, in your opinion?
Underrated hero? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think the big hero is Alex Smith. That's easy. So that's not necessarily underrated. You know, I mean, Gibson coming in. I don't know. I mean, I kind of gave you some of the guys that I thought have stood up and kind of surprised me, you know, or that I'm liking seeing the performance of them. So maybe it's just the way that this coaching staff is bringing them together.
Yeah, everyone is contributing. You're absolutely right about that. And one of the quotes from Ron Rivera in his victory speech yesterday to the team was, "Be professional." And I wanted to ask your opinion on what you think that means that Ron Rivera is trying to say to the team.
You know, don't get too far ahead of yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't go get cocky. Don't go get lazy. Don't think that you've achieved or accomplished anything at this point. You know, go about your business in that manner that the eyes are on you now. People are going to be watching and paying attention now. And so you have to be professional in how you approach everything. You know, and I think that that's just a good mindset to always have. But this team is finding new success. And again, you know, they're getting that attention from the national media. Don't give them more reasons to say you slacked off at your job just because you had a great game or you had a couple great games. Go out there and do it again.
Yeah, right now, Julie, the Washington football team is number one in the NFC East, sitting at 6-7. How far do you think that this team can go?
Oh, we're going to the postseason. I mean, that's good. We're controlling our own destiny. We're heading right there. Coach Rivera will be, you know, coach of the year. Alex Smith is comeback player of the year. Yeah, well, look, this team does have a legit chance of getting that postseason berth. And there are times where we thought that was wild and crazy and, you know, even maybe asinine to think that that could be a reality. But here it is, and the way that they're playing, they might deserve to be there, you know. And so I think that our season might be extended a little bit.
Absolutely. Julie, I really do appreciate you taking the time out of your very busy day to be able to join us in this pod, to be able to give us your thoughts, because I really do appreciate it. I know how busy you are, and I love hearing you call the games. It's been a lot of fun this season to be able to watch them, and hopefully we can go 5 straight going into Seattle.
Yes, that would be awesome. Thanks.
Absolutely. Julie, you have a great night. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for being on. Thank you.
All right, everybody. We were joined by none other than the great Julie Donaldson, the senior VP for the Washington football team of the media. Hall, let me get your thoughts on this. What were you thinking when the Washington football team was down by 7-0? What was going through your mind? Were you calm, like, okay, this is just going to go the way it has been going all season long? Or were you kind of panicking a bit?
No, I mean, I was the normal. It's been the norm throughout the whole season, you know, so especially throughout this winning streak where it's kind of they get into a little bit of a hole or a big hole. And then they battle back. And in the beginning of the season, we saw that they would battle back and they would just come up just short. But now you're seeing they're learning how to win games. Good teams find ways to win games, even when all three phases of the balls aren't clicking well. So I definitely didn't have any panic. I was, like I said, just kind of just like, yeah, this is par for the course. So it is what it is. So, yeah, no panic in my blood.
Yeah, that's how I was feeling, to be perfectly honest with you. If it was like 20-3, then yeah, I probably was going to feel a certain way. But then being down 7-0 and then 7-3 and then 7-6, as it got closer to halftime, I was thinking to myself, I was like, man, I feel a lot better about this game right now. I mean, even with the – because all season long at halftime, they've typically been down. But for this game in particular, they were up 13-7 at the half. Sitting here thinking, man, they're playing with house money now. They have to lose this game, and the way the defense is playing, I'm not sure if that's going to happen. I was completely blown away by the defensive performance yesterday. I don't know about you, but I don't know which one was better, the Cam Curl interception return or the Chase Young's. Which one was better?
Man, I'm going to have to go with the Chase Young touchdown just because everyone's been clamoring all season for that breakout game by Chase Young. Yes, and obviously this was the best one to do it against because it was against Kyle Shanahan. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows the disdain that he has for Dan Snyder and this organization, even though he says that he doesn't anymore.
Yeah, I love seeing him pout on the sideline after that pick six from Cam Curl when he had his hands on his knees. Yes, that's the image I was looking for, baby.
So glorious. But, nah, just for, like, all the – I mean, you go back to that Giants game where Antonio Gibson had the fumble from behind, and it was like the Three Stooges or the 10 Stooges, 11 Stooges, where no one could jump on the football.
Right.
It's popping out of everywhere. It's like a cartoon, like, football game. So for him to be able to scoop it up, grabbing, just and then outrun Nick. Well, he didn't really outrun Nick Mullins, but it was great. There was a great block by Smith Williams to had to kind of hold on to Nick Mullins, get him out the way. But yeah, definitely the scoop and score by Chase, just because, like I said, how many times this season have we seen the defensive lineman or anyone on defense try to scoop it up and score, and they just bloop, 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 balls bouncing everywhere.
Yeah. No, I think Jeremy Sprinkle knows that all too well, sir.
Yeah.
All too well. No, but in all seriousness, Deron Payne, after forcing that fumble on the Chase Young return for a touchdown, he actually was running and blocking for Alex Smith, him and Montez, and they were stride for stride going with Trent Williams and making sure Trent was blocked. And Chris Bryant actually said on Twitter, I thought it was hilarious, he said, you know, they weren't going to let that boy catch him. There was no way they were going to let him get up to their boy. And I thought that was a huge part in the game, is that, you know, not only are these guys trying to get sacks, trying to get these great numbers, they're playing for themselves. You know, like they're helping each other out. They're blocking for one another, and they love it. And I just love this team right now. The way that they're playing as one, you cannot argue against it. Now, Hall, let's go to our game beers. And as we always do after these games, we give out the game beers to players that we think deserve to kick their feet up on the couch, enjoy a beer, and enjoy their night because they balled the hell out. Who's getting your game beer? I know that we're going to say the normal Chase Young, Cam Curl, but give me someone interesting.
No, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go the easy, the low-bearing fruit, because obviously those guys stood out and they jumped off the screen if you were watching all four quarters of that game. But I'm going to go with someone else that did jump off the screen, never really gets talked about a lot, and gets a lot of flack for no reason, though. And I'm going to go with Deron Payne. You mentioned it. He had the sack on Nick Mullins, which led to the scoop and score by Chase. If you watched throughout the whole game in the run game, he was throwing dudes to the side, getting tackles for losses. You mentioned he was running downfield, blocking on this on the turnover. So, yeah, I mean, just he had an all-around great game. That whole front four had a great game. But Deron Payne definitely stood out to me. And you can kick your feet back in your nice, probably comfy recliner you have in your man cave at your crib and crack open a beer.
Yeah, for me, my game beer is going to go to Jeremy Reeves. To Shazier Everett got injured during the game. Jeremy Reeves had to step right in and be able to contribute, and he did in a big way. There was one play in particular. It was a cover three. I think it was a third and four, possibly, and they had run a fade from the slot route. And obviously in a cover three, that is a tight window for the safety. And Jeremy Reeves bulleted to the football, dove in, was able to swat the ball out of the way to force the punt. Jeremy, you deserve a game beer. You came off the bench. You balled. You did exactly what we needed you to, and you continue to ball out every time there's an opportunity given to you. Jeremy Reeves, enjoy the game beer, sir. You absolutely deserved it. Now, sir, the big one of the biggest things to me that I have to talk about today is the offense and how we think that that's going to go, because that was a putrid performance yesterday. I know the 49ers defense is good. They're very good, but like you just said, that was stinky. That was stinky what they came out with yesterday. Do you think that this was what I alluded to with Julie saying that it reminded me of Alex Smith coming off the bench against the Rams, where just the offense looked horrendous? Do you think that's the same type of thing here if Dwayne gets a full week of preparation that he'll probably look a lot better?
I would hope so. I mean, he's been sitting on the sidelines like Julie alluded to. You can kind of see the growth and his maturity. Even after the game in his press conference, you can kind of see, like, he was humble. He had, like, a real humble tone in his voice and just talking about all of the adversity he's gone through. He said that it's been, like, the most adverse time in his life that he's ever gone through. So I definitely think that mentally he'll be prepared. I hope that he's been watching Alex Smith, preparing like Alex Smith, and kind of seeing what it takes to be an NFL starter. And obviously, like you said, coming in off the bench like that in a pressure situation where it's kind of like, you know, the game is kind of like on your shoulders, where it's like, don't lose it for us. Don't try to win it for us. We're already up, but don't lose it. And that's more pressure than I feel like going out there and be like, win this game for us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, I definitely think, I hope that these past, what are we in, week 14, these past like 8, 9, 10 weeks, whatever it's been, I hope that he's learned how to study, how to prepare. And I hope that, if he does have to be the starter next week against Seattle, I hope that he's ready.
Yeah, and speaking of Seattle with their wide receivers, let's head on to our fan questions of the day, because we have a lot, and they're really, really good ones. Let's start with Tony Shivers, Tony the Tiger. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate your question, sir, as always. With Steven Sims continuing to underwhelm, do you think someone like Isaiah Wright or AGG will get more control of his snaps?
I don't know about AGG because he's kind of that big body, tall, like outside receiver. I don't know if he's ready, really ready to line up in the slot and kind of play that slot wide receiver role yet. But we've seen Isaiah Wright step in whenever Steve Sims had the turf toe. He was kind of making a couple plays here and there. You've seen a couple catches throughout the season where he's made a couple plays, a couple nice little like yards after the catch run, stuff like that. He's kind of the same player as Steve Sims. I don't think he's as explosive. But I definitely think that if Sims doesn't step it up and pick up his slack, then he could definitely see some targets go. I mean, you saw Robert Foster get in the game this week as well.
That was very surprising.
Yeah, that just goes to show you that the belief in Sims is kind of diminishing.
Yeah, slowly but surely. And Ron actually talked about in a presser last week about how good AGG looked in the scout team and how smooth he was looking. So he might be back sooner rather than later. And before he went on IR, he was used heavily as the, you know, as the pre-snap motion kind of runner and wide receiver on the end of rounds. So I could very easily see AGG being the one taking those snaps away from Steven Sims. The only question is, how healthy is he? Is coach being legit in saying that AGG has looked really good? And if that's the case, then yeah, if they call him up this week, then I do think that he'll take the lion's share away from him without a doubt. Now let's move on to our next fan question from Sean, Florida Skins fan for life. Hall, do you think Scott Turner went vanilla on the playbook after Alex Smith went out? Or is Dwayne Haskins really that bad and not part of the Washington football team future?
No, I think it was more of a vanilla approach. Like I said, we're already up at that point. The defense is playing out of their minds at that point. They're pretty much – I know the offense had put up a couple points on the – San Francisco's offense had put up a couple points, and that's how they got back into the game. But I think that I think Ron had told him pretty much like, hey, let's not try to do anything crazy. Let's just go out there, try to sustain a couple drives, like bleed the clock out, which obviously doesn't really involve passing. That's a lot more running game. And I think that it wasn't really vanilla. It was more of like bleed the clock, run the ball, and then let the defense win the game for us like they did the whole game.
Yeah, and I thought Julie answered it perfectly, to be honest. It was just don't lose the football game.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what it was. Don't turn the football over. And but I will say,
even though he almost did.
Yeah, he almost did. But I will say the accuracy issues continue to show. I don't know. I was thinking about this on the drive up this morning, and I hate to say it, but he's like the new age Jay Cutler, where Jay Cutler had such a strong arm, coaches would all the time pound on him, use your mechanics, and he would say, no, I'm Jay Cutler, I can do what I want, just being stubborn all the time. You continued to see that yesterday, Dwayne throwing off one foot, not stepping into his throws. That one throw to Steven Sims was a bad throw that was low and away. Even though Sims got a hand on it, that was not a catchable football. Yeah. It wasn't. I don't care who you are. And the one issue is the touch. He's missing that slight, you know, little touch there. And I don't think that it's like an indictment against Haskins. I don't think this is the end-all, be-all for Haskins. I think that is coming off the bench and being not acclimated to those wide receivers. Obviously, you're going to miss the touch there because you haven't been working with them. And we know that this season he hasn't been getting work with the ones, so how would he have that kind of cohesion with the wide receivers coming off the bench? So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But, yes, Sean, I do think that Scott Turner vanilla'd everything because they had a discussion at halftime, and that was just make sure – he's not putting the ball in harm's way, and the defense will close this game out for us.
Yeah.
Just slowly but surely, let's try to run the football. And that was one of my issues with Scott yesterday, is that they were not establishing the run very well at all. They were trying to get Dwayne Haskins in a rhythm, and it was actually stopping the clock, which was the biggest concern for me yesterday. It's like, stop trying to throw. Just continue running the ball down their throat. Just bleed the clock as much as you can. Because they were going out three and outs, but they were stopping the clock as they do it. I don't care about the three and out as long as you're bleeding the clock, because that's over 3 minutes taken off. And especially at that point, that's the difference in the game. You're not playing the San Francisco 49ers anymore. You're playing against the clock, in my personal opinion. Now, the next question was from Sergio. He said, at some point, we'll have to address the lack of real offensive players on the roster. We have lots of ifs, but those are based on the improving of the offense. So what's the best scenario for the Washington football team next season at the playmaker position? Free agency, the draft? What do you think?
I would go draft just because you always want the young talent, the guys on the rookie contracts, because that's how you can build around the team, build around the offense. And you want to have guys that like you draft to like grow through your system, and then eventually, hopefully, you re-sign them to their second contract. You don't let them slip away if they're that good of a player. But I mean, I expect them to be really active in free agency, obviously. Like I said, a guy like Curtis Samuel's coming on the market. Ron Rivera knows him very well. So does Scott Turner from the Carolina days. A guy like Allen Robinson's going to be on the market next year at wide receiver. Great number two target to go opposite of Terry. But like I said, I definitely think that there's a lot of young wide receiver talent, a lot of young playmaker talent in this draft coming up. And especially at the position we're drafting at, it's going to be a prime position of maybe a offensive weapon right there.
Yeah, look, I'm right now in the process of looking for a new vehicle. And so what I'm looking for is I'm looking for, you know, a certain criteria that has to fit. And in regards to free agency, dude, I don't want to go and just get anybody, you know, pick them off the street. What I want is the right situation, that one gem, the right gelling. And that's why I think Juju Smith-Schuster fits in here. He's 24 years old. He's a great character wide receiver. You've heard all season long from the Steelers that he doesn't care about getting the receptions. He doesn't care about getting the touchdowns. He's hyped whenever one of those wide receivers gets one. That's the Ron Rivera type of guy. He's young. He can catch the football. He still has a lot of future ahead of him, and he has the right mindset to be a leader on this football team. So I think if you're going to pull that trigger, it has to be the right scenario. I'm not in love with Curtis Samuel, but I think with the playmaker position, I wouldn't mind them going and signing a free agency, but I also wouldn't hate if they just stuck with the draft, because we have seen that with these teams, getting better through the draft is how you win championships, not by going and overspending in free agency like we have seen before. You know what I mean? So that was by Sergio Martin, by the way. Thank you, Sergio, over in Spain with a great question. Thank you, sir. Now, Sharp Eye Washington, Archangel wants to know, what about Landon Collins after next season? The team has a potential out after 2022 that will result in a $9 million cap hit. Curl can play free, and Reeves and Everett can play strong. What do you think, Hall?
I mean, he has a pretty big contract. Obviously, this coaching staff was not the one that signed him in free agency. It was like the Bruce Allen regime and people, front office people. But I definitely think that after 2022, they'll probably be out of the contract, take the little $9 million hit. Guys like Cameron Curler stepped up. Hopefully, we're going to retain Kyle Smith, and he'll be the GM going forward, and he'll continue to kind of get those gem, like fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round players out of the draft that can step in right there and become either role players or starters. So I definitely think Cam Curl and X safety is going to be the guys going forward, as opposed to Landon Collins after 22.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. It's just bad timing, wrong place, wrong time, and it's guys taking their opportunities and taking advantage of it. That was obvious by what happened with Cam Curl. Nobody was really expecting this from Cam in the offseason, and luckily Landon Collins, I hate to say that, but gets injured, and Cam Curl comes in and really turns some heads. So if I'm the coaching staff, why wouldn't I go the cheaper route and go to the draft and be able to take away that $9 million? I think you're absolutely right, Sharp Eye Washington. I do think that Landon Collins is probably going to be off the roster by 2022. I'm not gonna lie to you, dude. I'm not gonna puff it up.
Yeah, I mean, look, the only way, if he has a, which, what does he have, an Achilles injury, right? Yeah, so I mean, dudes usually don't come back the same after Achilles injuries, especially in a contact sport like football. And with the way he was playing before the injury, it kind of makes him be like, you know what, maybe we should just move on anyway.
Right. Exactly. It wasn't like he was coming in was a barn burner. He was missing a bunch of tackles. The safety position was a huge concern when he was even there. You know, the deep plays were still being brought up, and we haven't seen that many as of late with this secondary.
I will say the only thing I will say about that, though, in the beginning of the season, there was no OTAs, there was no off season. So like they weren't really able to gel together. Like obviously the missed tackles is unexcusable because you've been tackling since Pee Wee football, and that's what you're actually known for, is being a great tackler. But as far as the coverage thing, like the whole back end thing, the communication, I kind of got where that was in the beginning of the season because they hadn't gelled together yet. They didn't really play together yet. But and then obviously now you see it now. They had got time to play together, gel together. Everyone kind of knows like the other person's skill set, what they can do bad, what they can do good. So I can definitely I'll give them a slight pass on that. But like I said, coming back from the Achilles, your lateral movement's going to be altered a lot, and playing safety back there, you got to be able to have a lot of range going forward. So It sucks. I love Landon Collins, but it is what it is.
It is. I was very hyped when we got him, dude.
I was like, yo, he's about to be the next, obviously not Sean Taylor, but kind of reminiscence of like that whole like Sean T era of defense.
Yeah, just the bringing the respect factor back exactly. to that safety
position. No one's going to run across the middle against him.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Now, Ash Burning, Johnny Local, wants to know, why hasn't a number two wide receiver emerged? Blocking, routes, catches, it's open for the taking. Why hasn't anybody gotten it?
That's what it was. Obviously, coming into the season, a lot of people were down on this wide receiver room and these playmakers because outside of Terry McLaurin, it was kind of, who's that next guy? Mm. We've seen Cam Sims kind of step up, take that role, but his problem over the years has been consistency, and you're kind of seeing that now. He's not really consistent enough to be that staple number two guy. And obviously, Dontrell Emmons has been a guy that's bounced around the league. Steve Sims kind of not really that outside number two guy. He's a kind of a shorter, shifty slot guy. And then AGG has been injured. So, I mean, you know, it's not really been anyone to step up. And, again, that's why I said I think that in free agency and in the draft, they're going to be actively looking for playmakers and a number two wide receiver.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. I don't know why they haven't yet, Ash Burning. I really don't know, to be perfectly honest, because they had the talent there. We've seen Cam Sims emerge, make some big-time plays when it has been needed. But it's like it's just not necessary for the number two wide receiver spot. The way that this team wins games is by moving the chains on short yardage situations and then running the football well with play action coming off of it. And they don't really need it. I feel like this is where the spot where AGG was supposed to take. Early on in the season, he was not a huge factor. And I feel like they were really banking on him taking a role later on at the end of the season. And that's where I feel like we're at right now. But I will say, I'm very confident with who they have in the building. These guys continue to show out. I know Isaiah Wright had like banged up his shoulder yesterday after the trick play. I'm not sure how injured he is, but that guy continues the ball. So does Cam Sims. They catch the football. The only question is, I think it's the attention. Like, how many balls are they going to get? And I feel like that's more on the quarterback and the offensive coordinator scheming them up to be able to get the football, in my personal opinion, Ash Burning. So I wish I knew that answer, to be perfectly honest with you, brother. I just don't have one for you. So let's move on to our next question from Mike. Do we simply take the best player left in the draft, even if it's another D end? Welcome to the show, Reed. What do you think about that?
I think it obviously depends on where we're picking. It depends on how the rest of the season goes. But if it's a defensive end, no, not in the first round. Even if Kerrigan leaves, Ryan Anderson, of course, he's expected to leave. But I just think that right now there's so many other needs on this team that could make this team a legitimate contender if they just find a couple more pieces that you can't just stack up. It's not a luxury at this point. There's other positions that need to be looked at further. But you would have to eventually at some point find a replacement for Ryan Anderson, who's more than likely going to be gone, and Ryan Kerrigan, because you can't just heavily rely on two guys. So, I mean, at some point, yes, but not in the first round, no.
No, I'm right there with you. I think we should go best player available because there are a lot of holes on this team all scattered all the way around. But I do think the D-end is that one position where you don't, especially in the top rounds. Now, could they get another D-end later on in the draft that does fit the best player available mold? Absolutely. But I love Bill Belichick's quote on, yes, I'm doing best player available, but I'm also trying to build the best team. So right. I'm going to draft accordingly. And I love that kind of mindset because that should be the mindset. At each one of those picks, you should have a top player available and you should have the need met with the best player available and have the best logical decision from there. What about you, Hall?
Yeah, you just hit what I was going to say where, I think we should definitely draft best player available at whatever position we have, but also draft best player available for that need of position that we have. So say it's like a – we need linebackers, obviously. We need another safety.
Wide receiver.
Another wide receiver, exactly. So, say there's Jamar Chase on the board. For whatever reason, he still might be there because he won't be. But
okay, you never know. He didn't play this year, so you never know.
Yeah, that's true. So, right then and there, he would be the best player available, and he would fit your need as far as, we need a number two wide receiver. So, that's how I look at it, like the Bill Belichick kind of theory.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the next question from us is Jesse. The best questionnaire that we have in the fan base. Let's start with his first one. Has Chase Young done enough to secure Defensive Rookie of the Year, Reed?
In my opinion, yes. There's a couple other rookies that are actually playing fairly well, but nobody just seems to affect the game as much as Chase. I mean, does he has it necessarily on lockdown, like 100% secured already? No, just because anything could happen. But if he continues what he's doing right now, there's no doubt in my mind that he's going to win it. I mean, he should be the front runner already. But anything could happen. But right now, if he continues this, oh my God, yeah. This guy is just a force to be reckoned with. And it's so crazy. And I said this to some people the other day, and I like almost feel bad saying this, and I don't want to get anything misconstrued, but I haven't seen somebody have an impact on this defense since Sean Taylor. Like this type of an impact, like that fumble return for a touchdown, that just reminded me of some Sean Taylor would do. Like, it's just like big play after big play when you need a big play. It's crazy. And like I said, I don't want to jinx it. Of course, nobody will ever replace Sean Taylor. Completely different positions, completely different players, but kind of a similar impact in that sense.
I wish I could say yes, because the fan in me sees the impact that Chase Young has on everybody else. But the logical sense in me says he hasn't done enough on the stat sheet to really prove himself. You know, Jeremy Chinn in Carolina is a guy that a lot of people are saying deserves defensive rookie of the year. But I will say that game last night really does put him in the position to win it. Now, if he has another game like that, I definitely think that he has sealed it up, Jesse. I just think that he's inches away. What about you, Hall?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you where I don't think that he's got it like locked in. I don't think that he's like – He might have vaulted up to number one just off this past game. But I definitely think, like you say, guys like Jeremy Chinn, guys like I forget the dude from the Colts. That's
Julian Blackman,
yes.
He's playing
extremely well. He's up there. So I definitely think it's down to those three guys. And if Chase Young continues to play like he did against San Francisco or even against the Steelers on the upward trend, he'll definitely get it.
And there's also the safety in Cincinnati. I forget his last name.
Yeah.
Lord bless me. I can't remember.
But he's like the only bright spot on the Bengals other
Jesse
than
Bates.
Jesse Bates. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is. He is up there. But I think Chase Young.
Jesse Bates isn't a rookie.
He's not?
No.
What is he, first year?
I'm pretty sure this is the second year.
Okay.
Second, third year, maybe even longer than that.
Second year, my fault.
I was going to say, first year would be a rookie.
First year.
I'm saying 1 year in. So let's move on to his next question from Jesse.
This is third year.
Oh, third year. Has Ron Rivera done enough to win Coach of the Year, Hall?
Yeah, we talked about it the other day. I don't think that he's done enough yet, but if he can get this team to 8 or 9 wins, which obviously would be the division winner, 8 wins possibly could win the division, but 9 would definitely win the division. I definitely think that he would catapult up to, if not the guy, definitely second. But like we said the other day, I just think that guys like Brian Flores, guys like Kevin Stefanski, depending on how they finish the season out,
right?
I think they're the front runners as of right now.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I do think that they are over just by based on their record and where they were as a team before they took over. In my heart, I know it's Ron Rivera because the guy had cancer. He kept his team focused during all of that while being the general manager without Jason Wright being there, dealing with all of these sexual assault allegations with COVID, heading this thing. I definitely think he is deserving of it, but I will say I think that he will solidify that and stamp that when they win a playoff game. When they win a playoff game, I think that he has it sealed, in my opinion. As of right now, I don't think it's going to be hard for him to win it. But I know he should. If they win a playoff game, I think he'll easily take that. What about you, Reed?
Yeah, I'm right there with you guys. I mean, all things considered, like, we all know the situation because we're diehard Washington fans. So we know what's been going on. We know how hard it's been. We know everything behind the scenes. I don't think other people look at it. And, of course, you see the cancer. You know about that. But they don't know about the other stuff with the sexual assault allegations. They don't take that into account. That just what a dumpster fire this franchise was beforehand.
Right.
And winning the division, I think, would definitely help in that. I think, is he deserving of it? 100%. Will he win it? I'm not sure. Like you guys said, depending on how Flores and Stefanski finish the season, I think Tomlin kind of took himself out over these last 2 weeks. As much as that sucks, as good of a great of a coach as he is. As of right now, I think it's between Stefanski, Flores, and Rivera. And if Ron Rivera wins the division and those other guys struggle a little bit, I could 100% see it being Ron.
Yeah.
Regardless, I think he's deserving of it.
Also, on top of that, those other two teams, the Browns and the Dolphins, obviously great turnaround jobs, great coaching jobs on both of them guys. But if we win the division, we'd be the only division winners that have turned out of those three guys that turned around a whole dumpster fire team. In
organization. Granted, it's a terrible division.
Hey, but we've been playing the best over the past 4 weeks.
100%. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Best record in the NFL division wise in the, over the past 4 weeks.
Right. I 100% agree, but finishing at 9-7 and winning a division, that's going to be, it's a little tough to.
Yeah.
And in yesterday's game, Alex Smith did not play in the second half due to that calf being tightened, and they didn't want to risk it. Right. So they put Haskins out there. So Jesse's next question is, how concerning is the Alex Smith injury, Reed?
Me personally, I'm very concerned just because I'm worried about that the entire time I watched him play. And he just didn't look right early on in the game. He wasn't getting any zip behind any of his balls. You could just tell it didn't look inaccurate. Like Alex Smith. Yeah, very inaccurate. And there was nothing behind any of his throws. It was very concerning. They don't seem to be terribly concerned. At least they're not putting that out there in the media. So maybe it's a good thing. Hopefully it's just one of those things where it's just this guy. I mean, the guy hasn't played football in 2 years. I mean, every once in a while, something like that happens, especially after a major injury. It's going to be tight. And hopefully it's something that he can move past and that he can work through. But I'm kind of worried about it right now just because I feel like something like that would happen. But at the same time, Dwayne didn't play terrible. He didn't play good. He didn't play great, but he didn't play bad. I'm not terribly worried about that with our defense playing the way it is, but about Alex Smith, yeah, I'm pretty worried.
No, I'm not that concerned, Jesse, to be perfectly honest with you. I feel like Ron Rivera would never say it, but I feel like they knew they had that game, that was going to be a defensive-minded exit for that football game, and they had it. The way they were going to win it was defense, not by offense, and then they didn't want to put Alex out there possibly hemorrhaging the end of the season. So what they said is just chill out. And this guy is coming off of a broken leg. He was squirting blood onto his cleat the week before. I don't think that this is very concerning. I think they were just being safe with it. I'm not concerned by it. I think Alex will play through it and he'll be okay. The biggest issue with me is what we just alluded to, talking about the inaccuracy issues to begin that game. That's not like Alex Smith. He was very jumpy. You know, he wasn't decisive with the football. There was a one check down he had to J.D. McKissick that he could have easily gone, but he pumped it. And he usually doesn't pump that because it's in rhythm and going. And I was very put off by the way he started that game yesterday. That I'm more concerned by that than the injury. How concerned are you, Hall?
Yeah, I'm not really that concerned just for the simple fact that they said it's just like a little bit of tightness, a little bit of soreness. They said if it was an emergency situation, he could have gone back in the game and played anyway. And by the looks of it, they're not really taking it as something that's going to have him out like multiple weeks or like the rest of the season, something like that. So as far as Alex Smith is concerned, I'm not really that concerned about it. I just hope that he gets right, gets the treatment he needs, and he's, if not back by this Sunday, then definitely for that Carolina game after that.
Right, and you guys are 100% right. I feel like if this was the coaching staff has seen him play every week since summer. So since he's been cleared, nothing like this has happened. So if this is kind of the first time, you're right, I feel like it's just probably something that's just it's going to happen. Now, if something like this were to have happened like once a month and the coaching staff knew about it, then I'd be like, all right, that's not good.
Yeah, this is the second or third time that he had some tightness or soreness in that muscle, and then I'd be like, it's a little concerning, but it's the first time, like you said, first time all season. He's played through a gushing blood coming out of his leg, and he's played through everything else that he's played through. So I think it'd be all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the last question from Jesse, can the defense reach number one ranking in the NFL by the end of the season, Hall?
I don't think so, just because there's only 3 weeks left. We're playing the Seattle Seahawks, who's a high-powered offense this upcoming week. Even Carolina is a pretty high-powered offense. They got some explosive players on that team. And McCaffrey might be back that week. And even the Eagles, I know that like they had a pretty crappy season, but
they look better with Jalen
Hurts. With Jalen Hurts back there, they had a little bit of spark behind him. So number one definitely is, I'm not going to say definitely out of the scope, but top five for sure.
I think they're definitely capable of being number one by end of the season, but a lot of stuff has to go right. And one of the issues being from last night's game was that the defense was on the field a lot, especially in that second half because the offense couldn't do anything. So if the offense can get back to where they were two games ago, then I think that this defense could easily be number one in the league. It's all about them and how tired they are heading into the end of the season, because if they're overworked, I think you're going to see a slip in the production from them. What about you, Reed?
Right, as dominant as they've been, is it likely? I'm kind of on the same page. You guys are no, just because, I mean, like Hall said, Seattle scares you. Their offense can do whatever they want at any time that they want. Same with Carolina. Carolina, not only with McCaffrey, but I mean, you talk about DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson having a big season, and then Philly looking a lot better with Jalen Hurts back there. I know it's only been one game, but we're going to have some tough offenses that we're going up against. And can they do it? For sure. I wouldn't put anything past this defense. With the way that they're playing right now, they're playing fantastic. But is it likely? No, I don't think so. But top five finish? Yeah, I could 100% see that.
Yeah, what about you, Hall? Oh, you already went.
I went first. I can pre my answer if you want me to.
Earlier, Reed, while you weren't here, we did our game beers. And okay. So the obvious is Cam Curl. The obvious is Chase Young getting it. My pick was Jeremy Reeves. And then Hall's pick was
Deron Payne.
Deron Payne. So who is getting your game beer of the day?
Ooh. So you guys took two pretty good ones that were out there. I don't want to say anybody on the offense because I feel like nobody back there deserves it. I'm going to go with Jonathan Allen, another guy who he's just been playing so well lately, and just the penetration that he's been bringing. He's been winning his one-on-ones. He was winning some double teams yesterday. And he was just getting back there. And granted, was he swatting passes like Deron Payne? And did he have as big of an impact as Chase or Cam Curl? No. And Jeremy Reeves, Kyle, you're right. He played fantastic too. But I just think that Jonathan Allen is kind of the heart and soul of this defense. Like Chase Young will bring the energy, but Jonathan Allen is like the guy that's like going to drill into you. He's the one who's going to hold people accountable. He's the one who's going to bust your ass. And I think that that's huge for this defense. So I'm just going to go with Jonathan Allen because all the good ones, it's not too obvious to go with Chase, too obvious to go with Cam. And then you guys took two other fantastic ones. So why not just give Jonathan Allen some respect?
I have a question. I have a question myself, guys. Is this the best season that we've seen since 2012? Because, in this new era of the NFL where passing is so easy, you could throw down the field all day long. You don't see teams winning football games in this league against good competition in the 49ers with purely defense, without any offensive production, really. How surprising and how big was that win yesterday? And do you think that this season is kind of reminiscent of 2012, Reed?
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't want to say that because I feel like I don't want to jinx us, but it's kind of got that feeling where it's like now we're kind of rolling, we're kind of getting hot at the right moment, and this defense has just been unbelievable. Now, I know I saw Nick Aldridge point out earlier today, he's like, guys, don't get too excited. Like it looks really good right now, but when you see some of the rankings, I'm gonna get a lot of stuff from Washington fans. But I don't know, this defense just, it feels so unique and energetic, and like they can just take over a game at any time, and that's something that we really haven't seen here in a very long time. And I think as long as you got the right formula on offense and you can do enough to maybe put up a touchdown or two each game and your defense keeps doing what they're doing, you can win. But I do think that they've also beaten some teams that were overrated or some bad teams. You think about the Bengals, the Cowboys, and then the Steelers, who were good, but they hadn't necessarily played anybody with it. They're still a playoff team, still a very good team. And then, of course, the banged up 49ers. So I don't know. It's tough. I could see it going both ways, but I got a good feeling about this team. I do.
I'm right there with you, dude, because this team is just doing these wins in these ridiculous fashions, It's absolutely insane. Seeing them blocking for one another on these house calls is absolutely crazy to me, how much energy that they're bringing. Dude, I was texting with my father-in-law last night, and he said, I don't want to overdo myself. I don't want to get overly excited about it because, look, it's Washington football. So many times they lifted us up just to drag us down. But I told him, look, if I learned anything from 2012, enjoy the process.
Yeah,
that season went by so fast that I I want to be able to hold on to that. So here I'm sitting here saying, I don't care how this ends, man. I'm enjoying this ride and I'm loving it. What about you, Hall?
Yeah, I mean, I said a couple weeks back on a couple of episodes ago that, I think it was the Christmas Santa wish list.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wish that we'd be 7-7 by Christmas, which if we win this week, we get this. That's what I'm saying. We win this week, my wish comes true. Thanks so much, Santa.
Yeah, thank you, Santa.
But I actually
Hall's
said that.
Been good this year.
I've been a good little boy. But now, I was saying that it was kind of giving off the 2012 vibes as far as like ripping off win after win after win. Momentum is kind of snowballing downhill. And I honestly believe that we would have won that playoff game against Seattle back in 2012 if RG3 had not destroyed his knee completely. And yeah, I definitely think that even back then, like, yeah, yeah. Even back then, like,
memes were so, yeah, they were so funny.
Classics.
Yeah.
The offense was obviously like the dominant of the side of the two sides of the ball, and the defense did just enough to kind of keep us in games.
This time it's reverse.
It's kind of reverse now. So that's where I see the parallel between 2012, 2020. Also, crazy enough, we picked RG3 number two.
That's true.
We picked Chase Young at number two.
Yeah.
So it was definitely there.
And you had a late round rookie stepping it up and being a surprise in Alfred Morris and Cam Curl.
Yeah. So the parallels are definitely there.
Yeah, I was so happy to see Kyle Shanahan pouting on the sideline, watching Cam Curl run into that end zone with his hands on his knees, just looking defeated. That was what I wanted to see.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to see. After the smirk and what they did last season, kicking the team while they were down, and then for them to be good this year, beat them, and then for them to see Kyle Shanahan pouting on the sideline, it was all worth it for me.
Yeah. That right there just made it – that made it so nice. And it sucks because, like, when the Shanahans left, like, I was on their side with a lot of it. But, like, the way Kyle handled it, I was just like, come on, man. Like,
very, very petty.
Yeah, I get it. But, like, you're an adult. And then it happened multiple years apart, too, because in 2017 he sent those captains up. And then last – or 2019 – he's still, you know, they're still rubbing it in. And then it's like 2020. What do you got to say now? What do you got to say now? You just got smacked in the mouth.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. And, dude, you know that we're 4-0 since one of us has been picking in the predictions for them to lose.
That's what I've been saying. That's why every week I will take that. I don't care. I'll take the heat for it. I'll pick them to lose from now on.
Don't do it.
You might not be alone this week.
Well, okay.
Teaser.
Well, we can only have one person do it. So if somebody else does it, then I'm gonna go the opposite way.
Yeah. I'm not going to do it anymore. To be perfectly honest with you, this team is. I've said it many times. It's a team of destiny, and I feel like they are on their way to something. And I feel like Alex Smith is going to be back on this football team playing this Sunday against the Seahawks. I think they realized what was important in that game, and sending Alex back out there was not one of them.
Yeah. He did not look very good, and you're right. It just wasn't worth it. There's no point.
Did you listen to Ron Rivera's post-game speech, by the way?
Yes, I love that. Ron Rivera talking about how everybody in the league is going to be scared to play them.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it.
And the biggest thing for me was the be professional, because he was kind of basically saying, you know, don't overdo the win. It's still a win, dude.
Right?
You know, don't overdo it. Enjoy
yourself.
Still
have a long way to go.
Yeah, and then on top of that, Julie Donaldson today on Twitter posted that the parking lot was nearly full at at Washington Park. That players were back in there lifting on a day that they have off. Kind of shows you the mindset and the excitement with this team, that guys are showing up for work because they're excited to go to work. It's not something you really see at Ashburn. I mean, perfect.
And it's crazy too, because like Jay Gruden was such like a likable coach. Like a lot of the players really liked him by all accounts, but he couldn't get players lit up like this. Like Ron's got it at a different level, and he holds players accountable, and he's hard on a lot of guys. But I think that they respect that, and they're like, okay, well, this is obviously working right now because we've been taking what he's been saying, and we've been winning. Yeah. So, yeah, if we want to keep winning, let's keep putting in the work. And I think Ron's just done such an amazing job that it's a shame that he probably won't get Coach of the Year, because he really does deserve it. If you think about where we were last year and where we've been for the last 5 years to this year, it's night and day.
Night and day.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Now, to wrap this up, Hull, I know you got to go, but like, if you could attribute, you know, what was your feeling when the 49ers scored that second touchdown? When it went to 23-15, how worried were you, Hull?
Again, not really as worried, just because the simple fact it's kind of been par for the course. We haven't been up and like lost a lead this year yet, but just for the fact that we've been down, kind of crawling back, scratching back, and then sometimes we overcome the lead or the deficit, sometimes we don't. I definitely had like hope that – not really hope. I had confidence that we were going to pull it out, just for like the simple fact that the defense was playing out of their minds.
Yeah.
And I know Dwayne was kind of like not really moving the ball like on the offense like we wanted to, or like we should have been. But with that being said, like I said, the defense was playing out of their minds. Chase Young, Montez Sweat, Deron Payne, one of those. I just felt like one of those, even Cam Curl.
Yeah.
I feel like one of those guys was going to make a huge play and pull it out for us.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing how good, like, I don't know, maybe it doesn't get talked about enough, but how good Daron Payne and Montez Sweat are at batting down passes. Oh, I know Montez Sweat's been getting publicity for it for the last couple of weeks, but Daron Payne's been doing it for a couple of years where, like, he always seems to get a hand on a ball. Mm-hmm. And it's good having those two. And then Chase had a nice pass defense yesterday too. So I don't, this defensive line, just nothing surprises me with them.
Yeah.
And they're not even at full strength.
Yeah. And Ron Rivera talked about it in his presser, how Chase, these young guys, these rookies, are bringing energy to their units and into the team. And that's what he was kind of looking for. And he said, you know, and the funny thing is that we talked about in the preseason, this team is playing like we thought they would. You know, we talked about in the preseason, if this defense can play to their ability, being top five, and the quarterback position could do their best Alex Smith impersonation, they can win the games and they can win the division.
And we Lord behold, also said it would take a little bit. It might take a little bit without a preseason for them to get rolling, and it has. And real fast, one more person that does deserve a game beer is Chase Roullier. Yes, Chase Roullier had a 91.7 rating yesterday from PFF. He's now the fourth highest rated center in the entire NFL. Completely underrated, didn't allow a pressure yesterday. Did a nice job run blocking. He doesn't get nearly enough praise.
I know centers and, like, linemen outside of, like, left tackles, maybe, like, a right tackle here and there, don't get any praise whatsoever. Right. But, like, literally, Chase Roullier has been, like, the most consistent lineman we've had over these past couple of years without
any doubt. And that's saying something, because Sheriff's been a Pro Bowler.
Exactly.
And that think injuries might have a lot to do with that, but Roullier's been fantastic. He's so underrated.
Yeah, and I thought early on in that game they actually did a pretty good job of running the football.
They did.
They didn't. They couldn't throw the football, but they were running the ball with ease, and that's exactly what they needed. But unfortunately, you know, the offense was just inept yesterday. But thank goodness for Dustin Hopkins being able to knock some field goals down. I know they missed a long 55-yarder, but he knocked everything else in.
Yeah.
He definitely deserved it. And then Tressway is the best punter in the NFL. I don't care what anyone says. The field position battle was so bad yesterday because of the offense, but he continued to punt the ball and put them back at their 30 and their 20. The dude is just unreal. We don't deserve him.
No, we don't.
People joke around and say he's the best player on the team, but, like, for a while, he might have been the best player on the team, like, literally. Overall, like, football player, but, like, just as far as, like, contribution
for your position, doing your job,
exactly, doing your job and contribution to the team, by far, he was, like, the best player for a while.
He had a tackle too.
And that was right before that, right before the game. Early, I saw the Tressway, like, video where NFL Films followed him around, and then they went back to high school where they did his state championship or, like, the biggest game or whatever that had happened in his high school's history. And just watching him, like, get all emotional and crying that he hit a game-winning field goal in it. And he's like, it just brings up so many emotions. And it was cool to see, man. It's cool to see somebody like that get some recognition.
Yeah, it just speaks to Tress, dude. It really does, and how amazing he is and the kind of person he is.
All right, and he's got a higher completion percentage than, I mean, Tom Brady, technically.
He got a higher QBR, too.
Goat, baby goat.
Yep, he's a goat.
Baby goat.
All right, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. The Washington football team is 6-7, number one in the NFC East. No tie, nothing. They control their own destiny from here on out, facing against the Seattle Seahawks. That's going to be coming up on Sunday. Make sure you check us out on Thursday. We're going to be joined by Jamal, writer and podcaster for the Washington football team. We're going to break his pick apart his brain. Feel like get a gauge where he thinks this Washington football team will be heading into the Sunday against the Seahawks. All right, everybody, I'm Kyle.
I'm Hall.
I'm Reed. I'm sorry I was late, and I'm sorry that I had to miss Julie. And, you know, it's all my son's fault. Let's all blame him for taking forever.
For the rest of his life, just blame him.
Taking forever to do his tests.
Absolutely. And thank you so much, Julie, for coming on and taking time out to be able to answer some questions. You missed a really funny part in it. She, like, something was ringing. She, like, threw it out of the...
Yeah, it was, like, the contact, like, tracing little, like, beeping thing that they have on at the facilities. For some reason, it started going off. She was just like,
thank you so much, Julie.
That should be a meme. Let's make a meme out of it.
All right, everybody, please remember, please go like and subscribe on Facebook, on iTunes, on Twitter, Google Podcasts, Spotify. We are all over the place, but if you could also give us a rating, you know, just let us know what you think and what we can do to get better. We'd love to provide you guys with what you would like to hear. Thank you to everyone for your fan questions, as usual. Sergio Martin, Jesse, of course, Tony the Tiger. Appreciate you guys. We'll see you guys on Thursday. Washington football.
Peace.
Washington football.